And the best thing that I think we could do as human beings is to align ourselves with the way things really are instead of pretending they were different.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Jeff Heilman Project. If you're watching on YouTube, we are both in our work clothes, and I have no makeup
dirty.
On. I know.
I'm dirty.
I am rocking the, this is called a bubble ponytail.
It
actually has a name. It's a bubble. So okay. For those of you who are listening, thanks for tuning in on Spotify and iTunes. It's a ponytail with multiple rubber bands in it, and it looks like a bubble. But the reason why, today's episode is going to be sweet and short and to the point, because we're going to use it to talk about each episode. We usually come together and we talk about, hey, how was your week? And then we get into the topic of the conversation.
No updates.
Our episode actually is our update and why we're, but what we're talking about.
Son is committed to publishing the podcast when every time you interrupt him and go into his room, he's working on it.
It's like, oh, there I am again. No. So we're talking about what we did this week, like as we do on every episode. And that's what we're going to be talking about during this episode. And what we did this week is what we've just got finished doing, which was removing the carpet. And we're going to tie this into Wabi Sabi, but we are removing the carpet,
the Wabi Sabi episode,
which has been keeping the 100-year-old floors concealed, because the 100-year-old floors would be considered by the naked eye as to be imperfect, as to not be presentable. And so
they're not even hardwood floors. They're just wood.
They're wood
floors.
They're wood floors.
They're probably pine boards.
Pine boards.
Late 1890s.
Well, the house was made in 1906, so it's...
The boards were made before that.
Yeah, I mean, it's milled wood, and it's old, and it's not in very good condition. It's not polished.
It's not termites,
pretty.
Though. I mean, it's
not
solid.
There are holes. There are holes in the wood.
But those are the knot holes.
Yeah, the knot holes where over time, the knot is no longer
The donut hole is no longer...
not a knot. But I thought it was just a really good kind of a visual representation, or some way that we could explain metaphorically Wabi Sabi by saying this is something that's old. So why don't you tell us what you have learned about Wabi Sabi in your reading, and inform us of why it's important.
Apparently, it's rooted in a philosophy of chill. With a foundation of Buddhism, and there was a guy who was the guy that invented it.
Well,
it had to do with tea ceremonies.
Yes, and how tea ceremonies had gotten super pompous.
Tea ceremonies had basically become super snobbish.
Yeah.
As oftentimes things of aesthetic
gilded
beauty
and porcelain and perfect.
And there was something about a guy who had to kill himself because the guy whose tea service he was having was offended because he used simple, less than perfect pottery. And so the Wabi Sabi dude committed harikari. It's harikari Wabi Sabi. But there was another guy who was like an understudy of his, and I guess he had to flee so that he didn't have to kill himself. But there is an art form where people take gold leaf or gold powder, and they, when a piece of really nice high-end pottery is broken, unless it is shattered, if it's just cracked or a piece or two fall off, they'll actually do the work to go in and mend it. And you can watch videos of people doing this with some form of gold powder or gold leaf metal.
They glue the whole thing. They take the vessel, and the vessel has broken, and it is in pieces that are mendable. Like, you can put it back together again. It hasn't been, it's not like tempered where it's a zillion little pieces.
Yeah.
They glue that back together. But then, as we know, the glued pieces, when it comes back together, is no longer perfect. It is now
imperfect, but stronger
marred.
At those joints.
It can be stronger at those points, and it can be, in most cases, something that was passed down from a generation, or grandma's pottery, or grandma's fountain.
That's right.
And then it gets put back together. But then what do you do with the creases? Now, Western civilization would say
rigid, it's symmetrical,
would say throw it out, it was broken, yeah. It's no longer perfect, it won't hold water, that's whatever, right. Just get rid of it. But what the Eastern philosophy, what the Zen philosophy, the Buddhist philosophy was, would be to take that and let's celebrate those imperfections. And so they glue it all back together, and then they'll take gold, or and more often than not, they'll take gold leaf. And where each crack has been, they will put the gold on top of it. And then it becomes a new art form. And it actually is drawing attention to those
drawing
places,
attention to and being proud of are, and showcasing
yeah.
the imperfections which have been restored or repaired through craftsmanship and artistry.
Yeah.
And it is so cool because that is what this podcast is about. Originally, you know, this podcast has kind of gone through some transformation. It was about bringing the humanities to entrepreneurship, and it was going to be about business, and we're going to interview business people, and it was all business. Is this working? That's not really what this is about at this point. This is more a craft. It's a conversation. It's a showcase of two married people who have a bunch of kids who are trying to get through life. And in doing so, we are breaking things. You know, we broke our juxtaposition against the public school system by breaking homeschool back in 2003. And then we did homeschool through the computer, and that didn't work. Then we did homeschool through some correspondence courses, and that didn't really get what we wanted to do. Kids are bored to tears from that. Then we tried to do the bolt-on process of homeschooling as an example, where we actually enrolled our kids in the public school system version of homeschooling, and we met with the teacher once a month, and we're like, no.
Well, that actually worked decent until high school. And then it was decent until high school. Like,
yeah,
no,
but Jeffrey was just checked out at like 12, 13.
Well,
and so
yeah.
The unschooling of our kids, which has become teaching them broken bits and pieces of history and math and science and creativity, art and drawing.
Well, even back to your original, which is why we have a mosaic in our logo. It was also a mosaic. You were talking yeah. about things that are being broken. I just don't think yeah. that
the
it
mosaic
came together.
Is the organization and structure
and
of
the understanding that, oh, what we're doing is we're applying wabi-sabi. I love when you were reading about wabi-sabi and how you were reading about it, and I don't know if that was the Wikipedia on it or not, but you said that one of the practitioners of the concept of wabi-sabi, they were having somebody important, influential was coming over to the temple. And so one guy had cleaned the whole thing and
yes.
it was pristine and everything yes. was raked and
he
everything
raked
was
all the
sand and the pathways
yeah.
and everything
and
was trimmed and clean.
In the corner shakes the tree so
he
that
shook
the
tree so
maple
that
leaves
some
will
maple
fall
leaves
down.
Would fall on. And then he's like, now it's perfect.
Now it's good.
Now it's
yeah.
good. Because that's really what it is. Like we can't. Gosh, it's such a, there's so much pressure and having to be perfect that every book that we've read on business and from the position of the entrepreneur is that you have to embrace failure. You got to go from failure to failure with undying enthusiasm. Like failure is the surest, as quick as you can get up from one failure to the next failure, you're going to, you know, you will be successful. And so avoiding failure because of this attention to wanting, this desire to want to be perfect is not what we are about. We are about making big messes. We've made more than most.
We're about getting excited.
Getting excited.
About making things happen that people have never done before.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not that nobody has ever had seven kids, but we don't know anybody that's had seven kids. It's not that we were trying to break the rules with renting a house. A lot of people rent houses, but we rent the biggest, nicest house in the nicest neighborhood that we can possibly afford and could care less about the appreciation that we would be getting. Because we're reducing our burn, we're reducing our risk.
We were just talking the other day about how if you and I, when we want to buy, when we go eventually buy a house and move out of this house, we hope that our kids can rent this house.
Yeah. I hope that I just keep leasing this house so my kids can live here because it's a great place to live. When we do buy a house, I'll still rent this place.
Exactly. No, it's such a killer spot. But we just look at stuff
and it's, I don't, maybe we're broken. I don't know, but I look at stuff and I think this is broken. If it's perfect, if somebody's got it fine tuned, finely polished, absolutely perfection, I'm like, that, it's not interesting to me at all. So this concept, and I'm going to have Andrew put the Wabi Sabi Porsche.
Oh, that's
from the Peterson Museum. I'm going to send a couple of pictures and it's going to be right there in your screen somewhere. Yes. Around there
at the Peterson Museum, which is really where I think that was probably, well, for one, it was a fantastic vacation trip. I mean, it was a long weekend. We went to Hollywood. We've got to go to Mosaic, the church that we go to in LA when we're there. We got to go to, I had bought us tickets to the Peterson Museum. We got to stay at the Roosevelt and see Marilyn Monroe's room, and it was just a really cool weekend. And within that really cool weekend at the Peterson Auto Museum, in the downstairs basement area, as you're going exiting the building, there's an art room, and there's all this awesome art from about cars and from artists. But as one of the pieces of art was this Porsche. And it's a convertible, and it was a 356. What year? 60?
I would think probably late 50s, early 60s.
Late 50s, early 60s Porsche. And it is just stunning. It has no paint on it. All of the paint has been peeled away, so it's got its metallic matte finish body. All of the upholstery was this like quilted Madras looking quilted fabric that had
Recaro racing seats in it with Madras blue and white quilted shredded with Madras quilt fabric.
Embroidered, it was so sick. Bonsai trees on I mean, it's just like, if you look it up,
and then linseed oil on the outside of the raw steel to keep it from
go to the rusting. Link and look at this this vehicle, because it's really, and then, you know, there's a little description on Wabi Sabi, W-A-B-I-S-A-B-I, Wabi Sabi, and what it is, and the practice of like just embracing imperfections, and how, you know, gosh, when we were kids, like my grandma, my grandparents mended everything. We just got done cleaning out their house after living in it for 65 years. They didn't throw anything away. And it's interesting though, because I inherited a lot of grandpa's tools, and it's like some of these tools, like, he made, like, if he couldn't, you know, find the right tool for a thing, you made the tool that you needed to mend the thing. You definitely didn't go buy a new thing. You made a tool. It probably costs more in parts to build the tool to fix the thing before you just replace the thing. But it's that mentality. And I loved what General Buto said at his grandpa's service about grandpa. And he said that the Air Force had taught him resourcefulness. Like, he was an outstanding airman because of his ability to be resourceful. And in his resourcefulness, he carried that into his civilian life, to taking care of his family. And I thought that that was just a really beautiful thing that he had said, that really resonated with me. It's about being resourceful.
Yeah.
And I think that when we can practice not getting all bent out of shape because, you know, Nessie doodled in your nice book, or the dog chewed up the corner of my nice quilt, or whatever, and recognize, well, this is an opportunity when I get to practice my Wabi Sabi.
That's right.
And turn this into something instead of, you son of a what a bleep, you know, just losing your stuff. Because, you know, what is that? I think that's the whole point, is what is, like, in the grand scheme of things, having a dent on our car or getting a scratch is not enough to warrant damaged relationship because your wife drove into a pole, or because your daughter backed up and hit the mailbox. Like, we can either take it to the auto shop and have it fixed, or
and
we
there's
can
nothing
put
wrong with having your automobile fixed. I had $20,000 worth of damage done to my car.
It's an opportunity.
And we fixed it, and it was perfect.
Before it's an opportunity for wabi sabi.
The next week.
I remember in Amway when we were taught that the size of a man is best determined by the size of
size of the things that make him mad.
Makes him mad.
Yeah.
And so, if we could encourage you at all in these few minutes as we're introducing the concept of wabi sabi, would be that.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be launching. I've been trying to come up with a theme or a name for. I think the newsletter that I'm going to do.
If you don't go with Wabi Sabi, you could definitely still do MMOC. I mean, you could do muscle memory chill because it's the same. It's all the same concept.
Having the ability to, I learned, you know, I didn't make, you go into professional golf to try to make a living at it and try to make it work. And I did not make a living at it and it did not work. I struggled on my best days. I struggled to try to keep up. To try to keep off the bottom of the leaderboard for like 10 years. But I learned so much about what it takes to be successful from continuing to fail at golf for 10 years. The way that your mind gels like mother of pearl around the single grain of sand that is your golf swing or your putting stroke or your short game or
17.
Just keeping pace with learning how to get rhythm and tempo on a regular basis and to stick into this kind of sing-songy
state. That, by the way, is a reference to Vijay Singh,
yeah.
Who would, as he's going back in his backswing, would say 17.
That was the tempo he was trying to keep.
17.
Yeah. 17.
Yeah.
That's how he tried to do it. Another friend of mine, Matthias Gronberg, would his putting stroke would be 1-2. Mm. 1-2. And he would just sit down, he would get ready, and he would go 1-2. And if it's good, if it's bad, it doesn't matter. It goes in, he just would stick to that rhythm of 1-2. When you do something that you love and then you do it as a career and you do it thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours working at this craft, it takes you to an entirely different place. And it's the best definition of wabi-sabi that I could imagine was the time that we spent when you're playing golf and you become this person who's capable of going out there and shooting lights out rounds, and you put yourself under pressure and things go wrong and you have to recover from it. That's life. Like those are the life lessons that have helped me to be successful in enterprise software sales and in consulting and in public speaking and content creation. Because that's the way it really is. And the best thing that I think we could do as human beings is to align ourselves with the way things really are instead of pretending they were different.
Going back to what you were talking about, as far as being able to take the pieces, take the golf game, take the hole. I mean, that's the reality, right? Like if you bogey a hole, that's a crack in your vessel. It's not perfect golf. Perfect golf would be par. Excellent golf would be birdie or eagle, but
would be birdieing every hole.
But
that's so you can win golf tournaments playing even par.
Yeah.
You can win golf tournaments playing over par.
Yeah.
Because there's so many variables in golf, like weather.
Yeah.
Right? Pin placements. Changes in temperature that impact the hydration levels of the green and how hard and how well the green holds approach shots. Yeah, there's been, I don't know what I think Francis Ouimet won the U.S. Open at 19 years old back in, I want to say 1905, 1902, somewhere in there.
That was such a good movie. Shia LaBeouf, you did good.
Shia LaBeouf did a great job. But he was like 3 over par.
Yeah.
Right? But he played in monsoons in Boston.
Well, he played with what he had. And that's exactly what we're talking about with Wabi Sabi, right? Like, I think that we've seen train wreck professional sports athletes who just time after time lose their cool. And as they lose their cool and they cannot work with the mistakes because they end up, you don't ever hear from them again. Their attitude and their anger and their issues, if they don't get those taken under control and learn how to work with the trees and work with the out of bounds and work with the this and work with the that, then they cannot ever move forward. I remember you telling me about Tiger Woods and how Earl would, you know, yell and he'd do distractions and he'd like totally
pennies in a Coke can shake.
Yeah. Try to get him annoying to lose focus and not be able to play through with what he had been given.
Yep.
And he's still one of the best golfers of all time.
Yeah. Because of his ability to do that. I have a friend of mine, Chris Doris, who's in the coach. He coaches professional golfers and collegiate athletes that play golf for college teams down in Phoenix. And I asked him, I'm like, all right, you don't know him, but you know people that know him really well. What is it about Tiger Woods? And it was the Green Beret training.
Yeah.
That Earl gave him to make him tough, to make him resilient, because, you know, that family's kind of broken, right? Yeah. That family's got some stuff that was difficult for Tiger to get through. But in that process, like, you look at the person that he is today, his persona is even a lot more relaxed and calm because he's not playing really well. He's not winning. And there's something to this concept in my mind of embracing imperfection and looking for ways to draw attention to how somebody overcomes something and comes back from adversity.
Awesome.
So that's what we have for today, ladies and gentlemen, about a 20-25 minute shot for this week.
And we hope to encourage anyone that you're certainly not, no one is expecting you to be, we're not expecting you to be perfect.
You need to be perfect.
We're not expecting Mary you Poppins, to be perfect.
That's the standard, yeah, practically perfect in every perfect way.
We're not, nobody's expecting you to be perfect, but we can be able to celebrate our imperfections and celebrate the things that we've overcome, because everybody has a story and a testimony that they've overcome and gone through. And with each crack becomes a more beautiful joinery of it coming back together, and can be, and that's our goal.
And I would ask people to put in the comments to this week, you know, if you're working through something, if you've had a major failure, if you had something. Originally, this podcast was going to be called Hits and Misses with Jeff Heilman. That's the misses. and the hits, you know, the hits being, you know, sometimes we have success, and the misses, M-I-S-S-E-S, are sometimes things don't go well. Golf is so precise, so hard. I don't know anybody that can say that they played a round of golf absolutely the way that they wanted to play it, because just human nature is imperfection. And so if you have comments or things in there that you've experienced or ideas that you want to express, please let us know. And thanks for being with us here on the Jeff Heilman Project.
Thanks, guys. And thanks for tuning in. Have an awesome week.
Have a great week. Thanks.
Bye.